Well, now I've been accused of making this a much bigger story than it is.
I think you are. I think you are.
I'm just reading the tea leaves. Sam Edmund, he was in amongst this in the middle of it yesterday. He was just working the phones, taking calls. He's still doing it, and he's up to his pussy's bow at the moment. G'day, you look, you're a lot flustered. You've got a lot going on.
There is a lot.
Dishevelled you are.
I'm a bit all over the place at the moment. I just got off the phone with someone. But
Ooh, how'd that go?
No, good. No, good. I think it's fair to say, we'll recap in a moment, but Ben Rutten, I know you phrased the question, how could he possibly come into work today? And as he did it in darkness, and he got in there nice and early. The question for him is, does he want to coach this weekend? And would anyone blame him if he didn't want to? I mean, the board in many ways has made it untenable for him, in my mind, to coach this weekend. People are getting around him internally. He's got a lot of support internally. But it'd be impossible for him not to be completely and utterly rattled by the events of yesterday. So the decision needs to be made. Does he want to coach this weekend? Do the club want him to coach this weekend? The board have got a lot to talk about. I mean, they've met twice in 24 hours. They'll meet again and have discussions today and going forward this week around, you know, who's doing the review, what are the terms of reference, what a payout may or may not look like for Ben Rutten. There's so much to get through, but it was a dramatic 24 hours yesterday that led to David Burham's, you know, line in the sand takeover of the football club. So, as we know, Ben Rutten's a senior coach as we sit here now, but I mean, it's a stay of execution only, isn't it, rather than survival going forward. So David Burham, before we come back to the coach, the former head of sport at Channel 10, has assumed power of an Essendon board that I think it's fair to say had been at war with itself for months. I mean, that was triggered initially in May by Paul Brash's announcement of that football department review months after, well, 2 weeks after he said no review was required. It was led by Sean Wellman, the director. He had assistance from fellow board members, you know, Simon Madden, Kevin Sheedy. We know that that section, a bigger section of the board, wanted an external review. They argued hard for it. And chief among that section were the directors, David Burham, the vice president, Peter Allen. They wanted outsiders to come in and shine a light on all parts of the club's operations. And that angst then festered somewhat as the season went on. But it did go to another level when the findings of the internal review were presented to the board by the GM of football, Josh Marnie. And that review, for some, made for some pretty underwhelming reading, particularly when a 7-win season in the club's 150th year did reach new lows in the last fortnight. The loss to GWS, that horrific thrashing at the hands of Port Adelaide. So the board met on Sunday. It was decided via the majority that an external review would be conducted. Brasher felt his position was untenable as a result, decided to step down as president. And the board, as we know, met again yesterday to determine who would take over. And the vote came back for Burham. So,
Is it true that Kevin Sheedy was the person that shifted the balance of power?
Is it true?
No, I'm asking you.
I don't have an answer.
It's been
to
reported that.
Yeah, yeah, right.
I don't know that is the case, but I do believe that he supported David Burham and that side. But I don't know whether or not he was always on that side or he shifted his position on that.
Yeah, I get. And those that initially wanted internal, I mean, you can see a scenario whereby as the year has gone on, they've thought, well, we've got to draw a line in the sand, as Dave Burham mentioned, and perhaps take ownership of the situation we are in.
But just on this point, this leads to possibly a farcical outcome here at Essendon, and that is that they go after Clarkson, hypothetically, okay? They get him, but Clarko also says within that negotiation, these people are coming on board with me. Before they've completed an external view, then they're sacking people to make way for Al Clarkson and the people he wants to bring on board. Potentially farcical.
Yeah, it is. But if you're bringing on Clarkson, you're bringing on Clarkson's whole entourage. And then you're backing him in to have a better understanding of what works.
What you're also saying is that you're no longer then going to go down the track of actually having the external review properly.
So that's what I said last night. The external review starts and stops with him.
Review will be done for you in many ways.
That's right. He is the review, if that's the case.
He is. So Essendon have left it late, but they're about to formally enter the arena. So I know you dispelled those reports yesterday. I've spoken to Essendon this morning. They are completely false. They did not meet with Alistair Clarkson yesterday in any form. Now, David Burham and co. had a fair bit on their plate last night, and there are only 24 hours in one day. Obviously, we expect that to happen in the very near future. What we do know is that Burham goes a fair way back with both Henderson and Clarkson. Now, the former, since Ricky Ponting started doing cricket with 10, and the latter for even longer than that. Now, Adam Musay's been painted as the front runner at GWS, but as we sit here now, that appointment certainly hasn't been made. No decision's been made. So Clarkson, McVeigh, Kingsley, all still in the mix at GWS. Now, North Melbourne, for their part, remain very confident, like we've always said on Alistair Clarkson. Now, whether that's misguided confidence or not will become clear very soon. But they have a huge head start on the Bombers, and they have come a long way with Clarkson. But they've also had so many near misses in the recruiting space. Josh Kelly was close. Dustin Martin was coming. Andrew Gaff was tempted. Can they miss again? You know, they're going to trumpet a new deal with Mazda this week. And if it's not Clarkson, then they're going to turn to other experienced coaches. The names that I've been told, Ken Hinckley and Leon Cameron, top of the list. But geez, North have to get Clarkson. Essendon have to get Clarkson. It is high stakes to the extreme this week and in the weeks to come.
Yeah, and North fans, as we spoke earlier, would be very, very anxious at the moment and not having given up hope because they have got this level of degree of confidence and everything else. But hey, they've done everything they can. They have, from what we hear, have presented and turned his mind to the fact that, North Melbourne could be. Whereas 6, 8, 10 weeks ago, no one was putting Clarkson to North Melbourne.
Have they offered him a, do we know what they've offered him in terms of a tenure? Is it a 5-year deal?
I think it's might be at the low end. I think 5 minimum. Would it be 5 minimum?
Right, okay. So whatever he's in a strong position, whatever he's already negotiated with North Melbourne, one would presume that Essendon has to equal that or top that in a number of ways.
Yeah, I think there's more from a, I don't know if you're talking about money, but
all of it.
The club itself is the nature and the magnitude of what possibly you could achieve at Essendon. And that's not degrading North Melbourne because the rivalry between the two clubs is so real. But that, I shouldn't say that actually, because North Melbourne have cleared their debt financially.
Membership.
Yeah, all that's it.
But only Clarkson knows whether does he want to go to a really big club with big crowds and big venues and a big supporter base, or does he? Is there a romance at play?
And a lot of pressure going to a club like Essendon, who are impatient, given that they've had a lack of success over the last 20-odd years.
There's list assessments. There's all sorts of things that he would have to weigh up. Hey, an injury update out of Geelong, of course, yesterday. Confirmation: Jeremy Cameron, low grade right hamstring strain. Played every game this year. 59 goals. It is the same hammy that he nicked 3 times last year. The Cats, though, they're confident he'll be right for the club's first final, along with Reece Stanley, who has a groin issue, but it'll be right there in the margin, so not much room for error for him.
Not only did he play every game last year.
This year.
Mm-hmm. He played every hole of golf, apparently, according to one of our men on the weekend, which suggests it can't be too bad.
Maybe not. Speaking of finals, there's every indication it's a Thursday night final on September the 1st to open the final series. There's a Friday night after that, and then either a Saturday arvo and a Saturday night together, or they might be tempted the AFL into a Sunday mid-arvo elimination final. Given that time slot has been a goldmine for the league this year, very popular in terms of attendance and also TV audience. So they're still thrashing that out, but I think it's fair to say a Thursday night final will definitely open the final series.
Sunday final, first time since 2015. If in fact that is how it plays out.
AFL Commission met yesterday. Tasmania, front of mind there. The 11 work streams. The stadium, as we know, remains the sticking point. Tasmania Task Force document still hasn't been finalised and submitted. The league is still saying that they'll get to a president's vote in late August, but the clock well and truly ticking there. And Grand Old Day with the bump. We go on trial again tonight at the tribunal. A real puzzler with Zane Cordy, who's been sent straight there for the shepherd on Tanner Bruin that left the GWS youngster concussed. Curiously, wasn't graded by Michael Christian. A real curious affair here, where the Dogs, for a large percentage of yesterday, I think it's fair to say, didn't even know what they were going to be defending at this tribunal hearing. Ultimately, it's going to be excessive force that they're going to be trying to defend when it comes to Zane Cordy. And maybe they're a bit of victim of circumstance there a week after the Paddy Cripps kerfuffle, but a bizarre situation.
If you can get rubbed out for shepherding like he did, not making contact with his head, what does that say about the game?
Tim, after last week, then I've given up on commenting on this. Oh, I thought it was fair shepherd. That's how I saw it.
Yeah, snap.
Really unfortunate that
there's this unfortunate consequence as a result of the way that he hit the ground, but you're right. It was a shepherd, a fair shepherd.
It was.
He didn't make contact with his head.
Nasty whiplash, and then he banged his head on the ground. But he's not culpable for the head hitting the ground, the collision
itself. That's right. So he should get off.
How was the media review of itself yesterday in terms of the reporting of potential sackings and replacement coaches?
I don't want to be accused of pot calling the kettle black, because that certainly has been the case. We've all made mistakes. But, gee, there was some reckless stuff getting around yesterday. I've got a theory as how this works.
When I'm not on the socials, so tell me who went hardest.
No, it's there for everyone to see. But
Damien Tardio, who's that?
No, just there for everyone to see. But I've got a theory that you've got staff member X, right, who might not be right in at Essendon, not on the board, but connected to Essendon, let's say. You know, they work there, they're sort of involved, they know a little bit. Mm-hmm. Media calls staff member X and says, staff member X says, I think I know this. And media
who is
says,
he, a cleaner?
Well, media says, I've heard this. So then another member of the media calls the same staff member X.
Oh, he says,
"What's going on?" Staff member X says, "Oh, I've heard this.
From you?
Where'd you get it from?" "Oh, I can't say, but I've
from your opposition."
And it's media just feeding media, I reckon, a lot of the time when it comes to this sort of thing. And it just keeps. Sometimes you hear your own mail coming back to you in a way. It's a bizarre setting yesterday. So,
and then you got the element of, you know, when somebody gives the wrong information out there, then it becomes fact, and then it's repeated over and over again as this is what happened yesterday, when in fact it didn't happen yesterday.
Because the reality of the situation is only a small group of people at Essendon, in this case, know exactly what is going on. It is very tightly held. So sometimes it's better just to sit back.
Okay, we're not death riding Ben Rutten, please, for a second, but this is what happens. The reality, we've seen it, we've been in footy enough to understand and read the tea leaves. At what stage do you think there'll be an announcement?
Well, I just think if you're Ben Rutten, can you coach this weekend? Or I just frame it like this. If he's willing to coach that club this weekend and he's allowed to.
What, on the basis that will be his last game?
Yeah, then that's, well, whatever basis, but maybe he doesn't know. Then that's massive kahunas for mine, yeah, if he's willing to do that. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't begrudge him for a moment if he went in there and said, look, this situation's become toxic, it's untenable, the board's put me in a tricky position, I can't coach this weekend. I wouldn't begrudge him that either. I just think he's in an enormously difficult situation, Ben Rutten. I've got a lot of sympathy for him today.
You didn't fall in yesterday. Well done. You were one that didn't.
I'm going to sleep every single night with the AC on 60 and the fan blowing in my face.